This is the Financial Exchange with Chuck Zotta and Mike Armstrong. Your exclusive look at business and financial news affecting your day, your city, your world. Stay informed and up to date about economic and market trends. Plus, get breaking business news every day. The Financial Exchange proudly supports the Disabled American Veterans Department of Massachusetts. Learn how you can support our great American heroes by taking part in this year's DAV 5K on Saturday, November 6th. Visit DAV5K.Boston for more information. Now, it's time for the Financial Exchange with Chuck Zotta and Mike Armstrong.
I walked into the office this morning and I was on cloud nine. I was pumped for the show today. We were receiving our biggest economic data report that we get every month, the jobs report. It was expected to completely blow the numbers off. We were expecting a million jobs created. You can ask Tucker. At 8:09 this morning, I actually sent him a bunch of like gimmicky clips that we could play at the beginning of the show. There's a Ghostbusters scene about jobs, an Offspring song, Why Don't You Get a Job?
I was going to have a whole montage.
He was going to have a montage of Show Me the Money and Dolly Parton 9 to 5, and instead we got this. I don't know how do we describe it. Just a huge disappointment. I was going to use more vulgar language.
Absolute clunker.
I've been here for over 6 years now, and this is the biggest miss on a jobs report I've witnessed.
Just a massive, massive disappointment in terms of a jobs report. Paul and I will go in here and talk about and debate what caused the expectations to be so high and the results to be so amazingly low. By the way, Paul Lane, Mike Armstrong, Tucker Silva with you this morning. But just to cover the headlines here, we were anticipating upwards of a million new jobs that would have been created in the month of April, according to the survey of employers that we get done every month. We came in with a quarter of that. A quarter. We're joined we're going to push this off till next segment to get into the details here, but I think it just bears mentioning early. The good news here is markets are up. They're up based on the fact that, obviously based on it's such a disappointing jobs report, Jay Powell and the Fed are going to continue to keep interest rates very low and use this as an excuse to point to, the need for emergency measures of Fed policy for probably months to come at this point. So NASDAQ is surging up about 1% and bonds are selling. The interest rates are down and bonds are, really up this morning in reaction to all this. But let's get to Emma David now from the Armstrong Advisory Group for details on this jobs report. Emma, thanks for coming on. Appreciate it.
Yeah, good morning, guys. I had to, when I opened up my computer this morning and saw that number, I immediately walked away and got another cup of coffee because, not going to read all of that on no coffee in my system. So, yeah, not the best news on a Friday, that's for sure.
Yeah, I'm just surprised you didn't say that you had to pour some brandy into it or something to digest the news. But I suppose it was 8:30 in the morning.
Off the record.
Is that frowned upon?
let's cover the numbers here, Emma. I mean, let's start off with where expectations were. I mentioned them already, but we've had expectations just going up and up here. And I think it was widely expected that we could be creating a million new jobs in this month of April.
That's right. That was the expectation, and it was a huge letdown for April with non-farm payrolls increasing by much less than a million, but rather 266,000 jobs. The unemployment, therefore, actually rose slightly to 6.1%, according to the Labor Department. But the estimates had been for 1 million new jobs and an unemployment rate of 5.8% for the month of April.
So the way that they do this, they survey about 142,000 different businesses, government agencies to determine how many people were hired. It's not like a census, right? We're not actually counting the number of jobs created, but we get a pretty good idea of this. That said, the data can be wishy-washy. We had a really excellent jobs report last month in the month of March. That one was revised down as well. What did we see in terms of revisions for the month of March?
That's right. So revisions for the month of March were came in at around 700 or so thousand jobs, originally estimated at 916,000,
wow.
and then revised down to exactly $770,000. Though February did see an upward revision from 536 to 536 from 468.
So big swings in some of the previous months, but still a pretty disappointing number. Where were the actual jobs? So of the 266,000 jobs that were created, again, on expectations of a million jobs to come in the month of April, where did we see growth? Where did we see contraction?
So we saw actually growth in the leisure and hospitality industries. No big surprise there, with 331,000 jobs added. But that was offset by losses elsewhere. And even in restaurant and hospitality, employers were reporting scant response to help wanted ads. Matter of fact, job postings on Indeed were up 24% versus February of 2020, which is, that last month before the big shutdown of the economy. The offset of losses were in manufacturing that shed $18,000, blamed by supply chain stressors like chip shortages. Transportation warehousing lost $74,000. Professional and business services lost 79,000 positions. Mainly in support positions like admin and temporary workers.
Emma, how much pressure does this put on, markets, the Fed, and, what should we now be looking for? I almost don't know what to be expecting now in the May jobs report. I mean, we had been talking about, needing several months of 700,000 plus job creation months, and maybe we get that blockbuster month in May that we were expecting in April, but how high are expectations now for the next few months?
Right. Well, it definitely puts additional stress on the coming months. I mean, if this is a one-time event, we see it in the markets today, right? Indices are up on this news. So if we're going to treat this as a one-time bad report, then it's not a big deal, especially on the heels of stronger earnings season that we've seen in the recent years that we're coming off of. But if we see a repeat of this in May and, even in the coming months until September when a lot of those unemployment benefits run out, then we might be talking about a recovery that is far different from what we had expected and, not as strong as originally predicted.
Emma David from the Armstrong Advisory Group joining us for a detailed look of the April jobs report. For anybody just tuning in here, expectations had been for jobs created in the million range. Instead, we came in at 266,000. In addition, the March jobs report was revised down from 900 plus thousand down to 770,000, over 100,000 downward revision. Emma, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thanks, guys.
So let's dive in here, Paul. We've got the numbers. We know what actually the survey reported.
Right.
First things first, I do want to point out markets are surging on this. S&P 500 up nearly, 0.75%. Dow was, basically flat or down earlier. It's up 0.5%. And the NASDAQ surging 1.25%. Why is that occurring?
It's amazing the contrast between the jobs report that we see here versus how the markets are trading. If we had had a strong jobs report, I think we could almost make the argument that markets would be down today, all because of the anticipation on what the Fed's actions are going to be going forward. Because this result was so poor, it justifies the Fed to continue to keep rates low and for them to be in a very accommodative move. Going into this morning, I thought I was going to have to make the analogy that it's like that learning center tutor helping out a student over time, being the economy, and then eventually they realize they don't need my help anymore. They can just be on their own. And the complete opposite has happened. And that's the situation that the economy has fallen into here by this jobs report. Clearly, there needs to be more help. But the reason the market is doing so well is because these accommodative policies are going to be in place. Remember, the market's always forward looking. And we see this oftentimes when we talk about stock earnings reports, where they might blow it away on a quarterly result, but they lower their guidance going forward and the stock peels back because it's always future looking. And that's what the market's doing this morning, Mike.
So that's what the market's doing. The market's surging because everybody had been worried about inflation. They had been worried about Fed Chair Jerome Powell being less accommodative on a shorter time frame. That's gone. 10-year Treasury yield is down below 1.55%. We're down at 1.53% on the 10-year Treasury yield.
It's down 10 basis points, right?
I think it was. It's down a little bit less than that now. I think any expectations of the Fed moving faster than expected on interest rates is blown out now. So let's push that aside and let's stop talking about the pure today market reaction,
right?
Because I think it actually makes perfect sense. The NASDAQ is surging based on the fact that tech stocks look a lot more attractive with very low interest rates. They can borrow cheaply, and you also just discount their future earnings.
Their growth
bit more.
Forecasts are more in place. Yep.
Yeah. So that makes perfect sense to me. Go ahead, Tom. What doesn't make any sense to you?
yes, I'm baffled. No. A text out of the 508 just chiming in saying, how is this possible? There are literally help wanted signs in every business I pass for the month.
Let's talk about that.
Yeah, I mean, great question, because I see the same thing. So there's two ways to look at this jobs report. You could take the awfully pessimistic view, which I would not do, but the pessimistic view would be, yeah, there's a bunch of really loud employers out there screaming that they can't find employees, but by and large, they're not trying to hire as fast as we think that they are.
Sure.
And hey, there just weren't as many jobs created, and the businesses don't see that surge in demand necessitating a whole bunch of new employees. That would be the real pessimistic view. Yes, Doctor.
Just one thing that just popped in my head. The Taco Bell by me, I know it's a giant fast food chain or whatever. Taco Bell by me had to close the other day because of a shortage of workers.
Yeah. So here's the reality.
Like, literally didn't open for the day.
I don't know how you go about measuring this, but there are, to me, two different things that are playing a very significant role in this jobs report. The first one we've been talking about, and it's been, getting clearer and clearer here that there are a lot of people that are on jobless benefits, and those jobless benefits are paying more than they could receive by going out there and getting a wage at $12, $13, even $15 an hour. If you're thinking about that logically, right? I mean, there are a lot of people out there, you know them as well as I do, that would say, why would I get off the couch for an extra 50 cents an hour when I can get paid by the federal government for less than that? Wages aren't high enough to compete with unemployment.
The one stat that really stood out to me, Mike, was we've got the $300 per week that Congress has authorized. You add that to the national state average, which is $318. You're talking $618 a week. That is more than $15 per hour you're earning if you're on those benefits. So 15 hours now, you've seen Amazon, Walmart, Costco, a lot of those companies have raised their hourly rates to $15 an hour. But if it's a close break-even point, everyone would rather be on the couch, so you're not going to see the push to jump out there. I heard one anecdotal story from a landscaping company nearby where they want to be paid in cash under the table, these workers, and then receive the unemployment benefits to manipulate the system. And I think there's a lot of that going on out there. There isn't the motivation to get back there. And these are going till September, these benefits. So they can have a great summer and still not worry about getting back into the job market.
Now, here is the other piece of this that definitely exists as well. And maybe this could be a bullish argument for why the next month's jobs report will actually look a little bit better, is of the largest, 200 school systems in the country?
Correct.
Only 60% of the largest 200 school systems in the country were back to full-time in-person learning.
Right.
So nearly half of students nationwide are not back to in-person learning. You can't go get a lot of these jobs if you are expected to be administering Zoom classes and all this stuff during all of that. Now, you've had a bunch of schools that have, returned to, even, Boston Public Schools, I think, are finally even getting back into place. And I would imagine that they're going to be some of the last ones out there. So, there is a lot going into this. I don't think we can underestimate the impact of those unemployment benefits. We're all seeing it. I think we all know somebody that's on it. I met with somebody the other day, Megan basically got laid off and just decided to move into retirement, making like 900 plus bucks a week on unemployment here in Massachusetts, more than they'll make in Social Security once they go onto Social Security.
Right.
So there is a lot of that. It is playing a role. I think that is playing the biggest role. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, I want to talk about A, what this is going to mean for different states in terms of policy decisions that they might make. We've already seen this a little bit, I believe, in Wyoming and probably a few others to follow. And what this could mean secondarily, if this continues through September when those unemployment benefits run out, what that means for growth, what it means for inflation, what it means for expectations for the market, all of that next on the Financial Exchange.
Wall Street Watch, a full update on the market's performance to date. Weekdays at 10:30, only here on the Financial Exchange Radio Network.
Spring is here, the vaccine rollout is accelerating, and travel is about to explode. So if you've been waiting patiently for your next vacation, the time to book it is now. And the place to go is the Buccaneer Resort on St. Croix in the United States Virgin Islands. Hi everybody, Barry Armstrong here, and you know I've had some incredible vacations at the Buccaneer. Let me tell you why you should come here too. The Buccaneer is an open-air, waterfront resort, and its amenities are endless. World-class scuba diving, incredible golf and tennis, beachside massage on the most beautiful beaches you've ever seen, and the finest dining anywhere in the Caribbean. Call the Buccaneer today at 800-255-3881, 800-255-3881. Mention you're a friend of mine, and you'll receive a $300 resort credit when you book your week-long stay. Call 800-255-3881 or learn more at thebuccaneer.com. Come on down.
We want to hear from you. Text keyword Barry to 63566 and let us know what you think about the stories we discuss. You're tuned to the Financial Exchange Radio Network.
This segment of the Financial Exchange is brought to you in part by Southern Airways Express. Now with flights from Hanscom Field off 95, if you live north or west of Boston or in southern New Hampshire or Maine, Hanscom Field is the hassle-free way for you to get to Nantucket. Southern Airways Express, fast flights, low fares. Book today at iFlySouthern.com. Paul, we're going to continue talking a little bit about maybe just the implications of this jobs report. Again, for anyone that missed the headline on our opening, we were anticipating a April jobs report that would show upwards of a million jobs created. We saw about a quarter of that, 266,000 jobs created, according to the survey of about 142,000 different businesses and government agencies on their hiring for the month of April. We'll get another one in early June about the month of May, and hopefully it substantially recovers. In terms of policy, we're seeing a few states take some interesting measures here. So both South Carolina and Montana just ended all pandemic unemployment benefits for their residents. So anyone, you know, no real surprise here what they are doing, but both of those states had a pretty low unemployment rate according to the month of March survey. So Montana was at 3.8%, South Carolina 5.1%, so a little bit lower than the average. Effectively, Montana and South Carolina are both ending the pandemic unemployment assistance, meaning that $300 federal benefit that was being paid out. It's voluntary, right? States can choose to decline that money for their residents if they so choose. The money goes to the State Department. The State Department then pays it out. Montana instead is implementing a $1,200 basically get a job bonus. You go get a job, the state of Montana is going to pay you $1,200. I would expect that we are going to see some other states follow suit here. So Alabama has an unemployment rate of 3.8%. Georgia's at 4.5%. Idaho's at 3.2%. Indiana's at 3.9%. Iowa, Kansas, both at 3.7%. I would not be surprised whatsoever if we see a few other, Nebraska 2.9%, New Hampshire 3%. So anybody that's on unemployment in some of those states wouldn't be shocked to see some changes to policy there. I think the bigger question, though, that is on our minds is this a temporary phenomenon, right? We've got extra unemployment benefits that will run out by September. How much economic growth is really possible if we can only create 266,000 jobs in a month where it seems to me like businesses want to hire?
It's a very tough question to answer. You wonder if we get to September and what type of inflow into the job market we'll see for people. It's really hard to gauge right now. I also have a prediction that this 266 number will be revised. I think just because
upwards.
I just think it's so far off from where we estimated. I would imagine somewhere in between more 300,000 or 400,000. That's just my prediction for next month. But the fact that you'd have everyone coming off these benefits in September, do they all surge back into the job market? Now, a big issue that we've talked about a lot with the jobs report is the participation rate. Mm-hmm. And it was at a high of 63% back in February of 2020 before the pandemic. So is that contributing to some of these job numbers? I've talked to a lot of people out here who have stopped working and just called it quits early. Is that influencing things?
Great questions. Wall Street Watch is next. Stay tuned.
Like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at TFE Show. Breaking business news is always first, right here on the Financial Exchange Radio Network. Time now for Wall Street Watch. A complete look at what's moving markets so far today, right here on the Financial Exchange Radio Network.
Time now for Wall Street Watch. We're joined by Scott Wilson from the Armstrong Advisory Group for a look around at markets and I guess, the stock market surging is the least surprising news that we are getting today. What are we seeing from the major market indices?
So a lot of green today. We have the Dow Jones up 0.43%. We have the S&P 500 up 0.76%. And then NASDAQ leading the way for today up 1.32%. However, for the week, the NASDAQ is leading the way down roughly about 1.2%. We have the S&P 500 up 1.22% on the week, and the Dow Jones is up 2.42%. We also have some green on gold. We've got gold up roughly about 1.42%. We have oil down about 0.36% today.
What's going on with my beloved burger joint, Shake Shack? The stock's down about 12.5% this morning. Having a tough time finding labor, or people just not going as much once the pandemic's over?
Yeah, so they are having a little bit tougher time finding labor. Their labor costs actually increased a little bit. But basically what it comes down to is they're having a really tough time in their urban shacks. Those heavily rely on tourism. They also have some shacks that are in stadiums and airports. Mm-hmm. So while those numbers are coming back, meaning stadiums are opening up with limited capacity, and the airport TSA numbers are continuing to increase. They're still not at pre-COVID levels. And their suburban stores are actually still performing pretty well. They're at sales anyways are at pre-COVID levels. But again, it's really the urban shacks that are really, those numbers are really hurting them because of the decreased sales that they have there. And if you look back and compare their sales this year or this quarter, compared to the same quarter 2019, you have sales down 15%. And really what's driving the stock down a bunch today is the reported quarterly earnings. So quarterly profits, they had a pretty sizable beat there, up 4 cents per share versus down 9 cents per share expected. But their revenue missed. They had revenue $155 million versus $161 million expected, and they gave lower guidance on revenue than expected. So those are the big things hurting the stock today, looking like growth won't be there as anticipated as soon as they were expecting. But they are hopeful that once the economy's, you know, if restrictions and tourism comes back to those urban areas as it was before, they're really trying to put things in place so they can be successful. One of the things that's a positive is their app and web sales increased by 203% this quarter. So really driving a lot of people there. They're trying, much like other chains like Chipotle and McDonald's, they're trying to leverage their digital orders and cultivate customers and loyalties with loyalty programs and digital only offerings. And they're still trying to grow. They're looking to open 35 to 40 new stores this year. So still trying to grow in the future, obviously, but definitely pulling back a little bit today as they provided lower than expected guidance going forward.
Scott Wilson from the Armstrong Advisory Group joining us for Wall Street Watch, in particular taking a look at the fast food company Shake Shack. Good ticker symbol on them, S-H-A-K. Just perfect right there. Thank you, Scott.
Thank you, Mike.
Those app you know, people that actually download the apps for your restaurants, it becomes so crucial to those business models. They find that when somebody walks into a store compared to when they use the application for ordering, so Starbucks, McDonald's, Chipotle, all these companies,
right,
they find that those customers spend upwards of 33 to 50% more when they use the application compared to just regular customers, because they send all these offers, right? Like, oh, you got your free drink on your birthday, or, oh, you collected all these stars, come and get them. They find that people spend much more money when you have these applications. You know, buyer beware, by the way, you know, that is the human behavior. When you download one of these food apps, is you spend a ton more money at the restaurants.
I was going to ask, I just heard a coworker this week say that Chick-fil-A had a deal where you get a free chicken sandwich if the Celtics hit 12 or more threes in a game or something like that.
Really?
And I overheard her say it, and I said, geez, I could go for a chicken sandwich. I was almost ready to download the app under that premise. And another coworker talking about Chipotle rewards points, same sort of deal, sort of enticing you to get in, and then it just funnels a lot more of your spending in that direction.
Yeah, I was out at one of our offices across from a Chick-fil-A the other day, and I had eaten my lunch, which was just a sad salad.
Sad, lonely salad.
It was a very sad bagged salad.
Wasn't fulfilling.
From the grocery store. And I asked my coworker, I was like, want the Chick-fil-A? And she said no. I was like, okay, I should hold myself up. I lasted all of 3 minutes before I exited that building, got in my car, and stood in line at the Chick-fil-A for my chicken sandwich. So shows my
it's so good,
shows
though.
My discipline. 10 days, everybody. You got 10 more days to file your taxes. Who's done? Tuck, are you done?
Oh, I'm done, yeah.
Paul,
got my,
done?
Got my
done.
Refund in a week.
Way done. No refund.
You already got your refund, Tucker?
Oh, yeah. I did it back in March, and a week later I got it.
Wow. Oh, Tucker, well, nice segue for us.
Well, that's interesting because the IRS is... but yeah, you're the only person that got one, apparently. Congratulations. We should sound the bells here. Tucker is the only person who actually got a tax refund issued. The IRS is sitting on how many returns? Is it 22 million returns that they're diving through right now? I think maybe 16 million returns that they're trying to figure out. One story here in February, a 72-year-old retired credit union executive prepared and filed a return online claiming an $8,000 refund. Hasn't seen it yet. Wow. February. How do you like that?
February. How does that work?
Since February, he has not seen his refund.
I was in March.
So a few things are going on here. One, I actually do not blame the IRS for this. I blame Congress by and large,
right,
for, you know, one, yeah, decades of mismanagement is the problem here. So, you know, the IRS currently has 15% fewer employees than they did in 2010, a decade ago. Taxes have not become less complex since 2010. Let me just throw that out there. They are no less complicated than they were in 2010.
Standard deduction versus all the itemization?
I guess. So you've got, you know, more people taking the standard, but on the corporate side, things are no less complicated.
That's true.
I don't know. I have a tough time believing that it's way less complicated. It's not like they were auditing the deductions anyway, right?
You know, right.
It's maybe less complicated for you and I to file. It's no less complicated for the IRS to process.
Right. Sure.
They have had to delay two filing deadlines, right? So last year, the 2019 deadline went from April 15th to July 15th. This year, it went from April 15th to May 17th.
Right.
They had to coordinate a total of 470 million stimulus payments.
That's what stood out to me, 470 million stimulus payments.
That was all on the IRS's back.
Right.
They had to figure that out. They also had to get it to people who don't pay taxes, right? They had to figure out all these people who they didn't have bank account deposit information for. They basically just knew their Social Security number, and they had to figure out how to get them this money. That's complicated.
And quite honestly, they did a very good job with that.
They did.
I know they get knocked for a lot of stuff, and some of their call numbers here are just unbelievable, where there's 1,500 calls per second at times going to the IRS, and you just have no chance to ever reach someone. But
yeah,
to give them credit, they did well with the stimulus.
But again, that's not the IRS's fault. It's not. The fact that they can't answer the phone. They don't have enough people because Congress doesn't give them any funding.
Right, 15% fewer employees.
Like, that's
yeah,
absolutely on Congress for not funding the IRS. And I get it. Everybody hates the IRS. If you've ever been audited, you're terrified of them. Every time you get one of those letters that says IRS on
right,
the corner of the envelope, your heart just sinks and you get butterflies in your stomach. You're terrified. But like they serve a purpose and we dramatically underfund them. The other thing too, remember that a bunch of people filed their taxes in January and February, and then Congress changed all the rules around how taxes work in March. So the change here was that if you collected unemployment benefits, the first $10,000 of those benefits were tax-free. And so, you know, basically the IRS was sitting on all these returns that they had taken, and then they had to recalculate how much of a refund everybody got compared to what they declared on their taxes. So there's a lot of messes going on. Here's the good news. For anybody that's sitting on and waiting for a refund like I am, if they don't get it to you by, well, I think it's actually already, because if you filed your taxes on time, it accrues right from April 15th. So for folks like me, we're getting paid 3% per year from the federal government for every day that they don't issue their refund. So I like that a
good
little
deal.
Bit. Yeah. Yeah. No, you can't get that anywhere else.
Not on a money market.
I will take that, and you know, not even a money market. You can't get, you know, the comparison is a treasury here because it's backed by the full paying ability.
Not even
of
the
30-year
treasury. Not even the 30-year treasury.
Let's talk a little bit about our good friends at Peloton. So we discussed this a little bit yesterday. They are recalling the Peloton treadmill because, as we've discussed, it is accused and confirmed of doing the worst thing that your product can do. What's the worst thing that your product can do, Paul?
Kill someone.
It can, well, worse than that.
Kill a child.
Kill a child.
Oh, okay, yeah, yeah. I was going to say, what is worse?
If
than
it was 55-year-old Joe who was being clumsy on the Peloton, a little bit less damning than it's if it's your 3-year-old child.
Yeah, right.
It's just worse.
Right.
Their initial reaction to all of this, by the way, the CEO, is it Jim Foley?
Foley, yeah.
I know the last name's Foley. It might be. I apologize to all
John.
The gyms. John, okay. Sorry. Sorry to all the gyms out there. It wasn't you. John Foley came out guns a-blazing when these first accusations popped up, basically told everybody there's nothing wrong with our product. It's perfectly fine, perfectly safe. People just need to learn how to use it properly. That was the wrong reaction, as it turns out, and now they are recalling all of these. They said in their earnings report that they expect it will cost the company $165 million in the current quarter, so the current quarter ends June 30th. This is a company, you know, it's a high-growth company. It doesn't make earnings right now. The most recent quarter, which was a huge quarter for them, they still lost $8.6 million. So this is going to be a big hit for the company. When you look at them going forward, I mean, we know this is going to be damaging. But at the end of the day, it still seems to me that those who use their product, at least two of my siblings are one of them. One of them has the Peloton treadmill. One of them doesn't have any of the actual products and just subscribes to the Peloton like workouts that you can do on your computer or on your TV. There's a whole application set up that you can do all of this. They are huge dedicated fans, and I'm not sure that this actually gets in the way of that.
It doesn't in the near term, but the thing to bring up here is with the fitness industry, it's all about fads. And if you look back 20, 30 years, whether it's Bowflex, Power Bars, just some of the fads that we've seen, CrossFit was incredibly popular. I know that brand still exists.
Still kind of is.
It still exists, but I don't think to the extent. My point being that there's often shifts, whether it's Zumba, jazzercising, whatever the fad is, there are constantly changes in how the workout industry operates. And Peloton was in the right place at the right time with the pandemic last year. And you wonder a year, 2 years, 3 years removed from now, if that is still the trend to have these at-home workouts with these bikes. I'm not sure that is going to be the case. They do have a loyal fan base, but I'm not sure that's going to be the case 2, 3, 4 years from now.
And I'll be the first one to admit that I don't get it. Like, I can understand the status symbol thing of, you know, the Apple AirPods or the iPhone. You know, that's clearly a product that has been proven time and time again that they don't have any real competitive technological advantage. They're a style thing, and it's a status symbol. And so I can get that. I admittedly don't understand the status of having a, you know, workout machine in your basement that you get to, you know, brag about. But it exists. It's a community that exists. And, you know, to be fair to them, I don't know if it's the next Bowflex or, you know, the next Nike that is going to have a dedicated user base, or the next, what's the clothing company that makes all the
Lululemon.
Lululemon, right? That's another one that, you know, I've doubted based on the fact that it's outrageously expensive, right? These Peloton treadmills start at like $2,000. You can go get a Nordic Track for $600, but there is something to that. The question is, can they keep up with the expectations, which are what, 40% year-over-year sales growth for the next three quarters?
Yes, which with
this, a lot of sales growth,
this is going to be a huge burden, not only from a cost perspective. There's going to be expenses to relocate some treadmills and houses to child safe rooms. There's a lot that's going to go behind this that's really going to drag on this on the company for the next couple quarters. But if you've been a shareholder for the long time, I sold it at 50. That I really kicked myself. Bought at 25, sold at 50. But if you've been a shareholder for a longer period of time, you've certainly benefited, even though it's been cut in half since January in terms of market cap.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Walmart expanding into telehealth. We'll tell you what they did after this.
This is your home for the latest business and financial news in New England and around the country. This is the Financial Exchange Radio Network.
Drinking the right amount of water is a key to a healthy lifestyle. Staying hydrated can help make sure that your body functions the way you want it to. So why not drink the best tasting water around? Do what we did here at the Financial Exchange and call Stony Brook Water. Their ion coolers produce the freshest, purest drinking water we've ever had. These coolers connect direct to your water supply, and their filtration system eliminates all of the contaminants that exist in tap or bottled water. In fact, one filter cycle is equivalent to 8,000 16-ounce bottles of water. With a Stony Brook system, you'll never run out of the best-tasting drinking water. Call Stony Brook Water today at 978-381-1476 and learn about the extraordinary benefits of their coolers. Stony Brook Water is also proud to support the Disabled American Veterans Association of Massachusetts and this year's DAV 5K on Saturday, November 6th. Call Stony Brook Water at 978-381-1476 and order your new cooler today. You can also visit them online at stonybrookwater.com.
If the Wall Street roller coaster has you scratching your head, check out our brand new podcast, Dumb Questions for Smart Money, an easy way to gain some knowledge about the latest trends in the business and financial industry without the brain pain that comes with it. Listen and learn to Dumb Questions for Smart Money. Subscribe today on Apple, Spotify, and all your favorite podcast apps.
This segment of the Financial Exchange is brought to you in part by Stony Brook Water. Stony Brook's bottomless water coolers filter your water on demand from the source, providing you with unlimited, pure, delicious water. Call 978-381-1476 and sign up for a free trial today. That's 978-381-1476 or visit them online at stonybrookwater.com/trial.
The largest private employer in the United States, Walmart, is making further expansions into the healthcare industry following the moves of several other large companies. Amazon is one of the big ones here, but expanding into telehealth with a purchase of a company called MeMD, who, according to their website, they serve, I think it's 5.5 million virtual telehealth customers across the country. So the idea is that this Walmart will be able to service their 1.3 million employees most certainly with this type of service. But really, it goes into the expansion that I think Walmart really wants to play a role in, which is going to a Walmart for your healthcare services. And I do think that telehealth is one of these areas that made no sense to me why it was not more utilized. It was actually, you could not use telehealth on Medicare Advantage plans up until the pandemic. It was not an option for like 99.9% of appointments you could not use on Medicare for telehealth.
Right.
It's changed during the pandemic. It has not been confirmed whether or not that will remain the same post-pandemic. But whether Walmart is the winner here or not, I do just genuinely feel like telehealth has got to be part of the equation post-pandemic when it comes to providing healthcare to not only rural Americans. To me, it's not just the farmer in Kansas that has to drive 2 hours to the closest doctor. It's you and me who are busy and just have a minor thing that they need to talk to their doctor about.
Right. I wonder how much market share it's going to take after this. Certainly, as you mentioned, this was a revolutionary period for the telehealth space. But how much can really be accomplished by these appointments? I haven't had many of them, so I can't really speak from it personally. But what can you really diagnose? Is it going through symptoms and then them giving a... They can't really make diagnoses without
Diagnoses
without I wasn't an English major without seeing you in person. So it's certainly going to play a role, but I wonder how much.
Yeah, it really just depends. I think, you know, first of all, it depends on whether or not health insurance companies are going to be willing to pay for it. I hope they will be, because I think it'll dramatically cut down on costs. From my perspective, there are a ton of things that I go to the doctor for today that I really shouldn't need to. If I need a refill of a prescription that I know I need.
Right.
The dumbest doctor's appointment that I've ever had occurred 2 years ago when I injured my back. It was the second time I had done a muscular injury to my back. I knew that I wanted to go see a physical therapist. I had to get a prescription from my primary care physician in order to do that. I hauled over to my office, told him about my back injury. He looked at me and said, yeah, okay, what do you want me to do? I said, I want you to prescribe me to go to a physical therapist. Yeah, okay, sounds good. In and out in 5 minutes. I had to drive out there to go do that.
I wonder if telehealth eliminates that. I don't know.
Should. Quick break. We'll be back on the Financial Exchange.